fifth principle is called attract to yourself what you desire. And the affirmation for this is, the divine creative power within me brings to me all that I want with happiness, love, and peace. The key word here is attract. Attract to yourself that which you desire. What you desire desires you, or what you want wants you. And it's really coming to understand that there is an energy that will bring things to you, that will have things begin to show up. And this is not to say that you just put out your manifestation desire and then just sit around and wait for some huge magnet in the sky to just turn on and be facing towards you and have everything just go, shh, there it is. There's an element of working with this divine universal force that is everywhere and a part of this divine essence. It is a divine creation. As you become more tuned into this divine consciousness, you begin to see that that there's really a spiritual solution to every problem in your life. That the things that don't seem to be working, the problems that you may have, whatever they are, in relationships, in finances, in healing, and so on, that there is, yes, there is a solution in the physical plane that requires you to get up and do certain kinds of things and act in certain ways. But in back of that action is a thought. And the same force or the same power that moves waves to particles, which is the act of creation, also moves your pictures or your thoughts into the world of form. The same intelligence, the same energy that moves a star across the sky moves a thought across your mind. This energy, this attractiveness, this attraction, this pull towards you and realignment of your intention with divine purpose is something that we can't measure in the physical world the way we would like to be able to measure, the way we can measure ohms and watts and so on when we're talking about electricity. Nevertheless, it is exactly the very same power. And the power that allows for anything to go from wave to particle also is behind your ability to think, and therefore your ability to picture, and your ability to decide what it is that you do desire. There is something inside of you that allows you to desire something. It isn't the desire I'm talking about. I'm talking about that which gives birth to it, that which allows it to be. The analogy here is when you begin to take care of your body in a certain way and to treat it well, to give it plenty of water, to avoid toxins, to give it the rest that it needs, to nourish it with the proper vitamins and minerals, to give it the proper amount of exercise, to do the things that show that you are respectful of this garage that is housing your soul, it becomes automatic. It isn't any longer something that you have to struggle with, that you have to work on, and that you have to think about all the time. You go to automatic. It's a lot like writing also, and creating, and painting, and music. You know, when Picasso was interviewed about his painting, and they asked him, how do you paint? He said, when I go into the studio, I leave my body and my mind at the door, the way the Muslims leave their shoes before they enter the mosque. And I just allow my spirit into that world. The spirit, this soul, this force that I have talked so much about in this whole entire program, is really a power of love that you feel in your heart. It isn't something that you process with your mind. But when you understand it and know that it is an energy that is working, that brings things into the world, into your world, realigns you, if you will, with what it is you'd like to create or have for yourself, you begin to cooperate. See, this divine intelligence will cooperate with you. But again, only if you feel that you're worthy and only if you know that you and it are connected. The minute you sense any sense of separation, it shuts off. The minute you place an obstacle there, it will shut off. I'll give an example of how this energy works in overcoming some of the things that are struggles for most people in our lives. Most of us have addictions of one kind or another. Almost everyone suffers from some form of addiction. And when I say addiction, I'm talking about something that seems to have more power or control over us than we would like if things were to be perfect. So for some, it's sugar. For some, it's alcohol. For some, it's drugs. For some, it's food. For some, it's approval, you know, needing to be a part of the tribe. What will they think? Remember, the mantra of the tribe. In terms of understanding this as a power and as an energy, I would like you to think of back to the room that I talked about earlier. And your back is against the wall, and everything to the right, even though we know that it's all one, spirit, God is in everything, okay? But for purposes of seeing it here, and listening to it here, we go back to the room, and everything on the right represents the physical world. Now let's look at an addiction, something that owns us. There are three aspects to an addiction. It's going to be an addiction to money. It's going to be an addiction to power, also anything at all. For many in our culture, it is to drugs and to alcohol, a problem that we are going to have to resolve, not with legislation, but with a new spiritual awareness. The only thing that ever has seemed to work for getting people off of addictions is AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, which has as its base spirituality, God, finding the solution to that which controls you in something other than that which is external to you, finding it within yourself. And I speak from experience. Today I am a camel. A camel is an animal that starts his day out on his knees, and it ends its day on its knees, and it can go 24 hours without a drink. And there was a time when I didn't and I couldn't, and I played around with substances. And I played around with alcohol, and I drank it every day, not enormous amounts, never in serious trouble like DUIs and things like that, but just so that it was just a part of my daily life. And then I found as my life and my work moved more into a spiritual dimension, that it became less and less important to me. And I found that I was able to sort of notice it and observe it and no longer be attached to it. So that if you look at an addiction from everything to the right-hand side of your room in the physical plane, there are three aspects of it, all of which are in the physical domain. There is the craving. There is the craver. And there is that which is craved. And all of those are on the right-hand side of the room. The craver is the person, the body. The craving is the thought, the image. I want that, I need that, I must have that. It's different from the craver. And that which is craved, which is external to me. The cocaine, the marijuana, the drugs, the sugar, the hot fudge sundae, the whatever it is. And it's all in the physical domain. And as long as you stay here in the physical domain and try to deal with it and get rid of it in your life, you are still trapped because you haven't gone to your source. The source is the way you transcend the duality of the physical plane. And so when you go to your source and go to the left-hand side of the room and become your source and now become the witness and observe that and just notice it and just put your attention on it and just watch it with love, which I'll be talking about in the next principle, and just observe it from a perspective of I am connected to that, it is me, I have become it, And I can also transcend it and go beyond it by just putting my attention on a new aspect of myself, which is pure. And so from the position of the source or the sorcerer, you just watch it, and it's not you. You're free from it. You are just noticing, oh, there goes Wayne again. He's going to have another beer. And he thinks he really must have this. And all. But from the perspective of the witness, of the observer over here, you are pure love, because that's what God is. That's what the higher part of you is, just pure unconditional love. And you direct that energy to that aspect of you which has allowed itself to be addicted. And it disappears. When I left those things behind many, many years ago in my life, it was as a result of saying and hearing a voice. And the voice said, "You've tried everything else. Now try me." And when I went there and truly went there and then began my manifestation meditation on that, it was gone. And now today I can look at those things that I used to crave, those cravings. I can look at the craver and all that is craved, and I can laugh at it. When Siddhartha, who was Buddha as a young man, was going through his experiences of learning about enlightenment as a young man, he was fasting for a great period of time. And his friend's name was Govinda. And Govinda and Siddhartha traveled all over the countryside. Siddhartha had been a prince, and he had never known anything about suffering. And he left when he found out that there was such a thing as suffering out there in the world. And he wanted to find out how to transcend suffering, how to go beyond it. And when he was fasting and had been fasting for some 50 days, and his friend Govinda looked at him and he said, "Siddhartha," he said, "what good is fasting?" And Siddhartha looked back at him and said, "Govinda, I can laugh at hunger." Do you know how profound a statement that is? I can laugh at hunger. What he was saying is, there is that which is hungry. There is hunger. But I, the I that is God, the I that is connected to the divine, perfect, loving source, can look at that and laugh at it. I am no longer that. And therefore, it is just in the physical domain. But who I am is something much greater and much grander than that. That's the power of attraction. You can attract purity to your life. It's why I put such an emphasis on drinking water for healing. It's interesting that when the kahunas talk about this God force, they always equate it with water. Water flows, water goes here. Water has no boundaries. This energy is always thought of as water-like. I spend a lot of time in Hawaii. I spoke with several of the kahunas who had descended from a long line of healers. And I talked to them about healing and how it works. And how come some people have this ability to heal and other people don't. And they explained it to me like this. Very intriguing. They said that the life force is really electrical in nature, or water-like in nature. Only water we can see. Electrical still flows the same way, only we just can't see it with our eyes. And this one great kahuna said to me, he said, being able to heal is nothing more than having an energy within you that is stronger than the energy of the person who believes they can't. All you have to do is have that energy be stronger than that. And he said, between your thoughts and any place on your body that you feel needs to be healed, like an ache or a pain or a disease or a boil or a headache or a backache or a cut or just a plain disease process of some kind that is located in a specific place in your body and you know where it is, he said, between your thought and that place in your body, there's a current. And the current is like an electrical current. And he's writing, I was writing this down. It was so fascinating. And he said, that current has charges. And these charges travel along that current. And between your thought and that place on your body, you can place what they call shadowy substances that will heal that sepsis or that disease or that pain. And the way that it works is that what you place along that current is your will. And your will is in the form of thoughts. And this energy that I'm talking about, this power of attraction, is really the power of your ability to think. It is your thoughts, which are not in the physical world. I mean, you can't get a hold of them. It is the power that you have to think. It is that power. And you can harness that power and place it along, according to these healers, you can place it along this current in the form of these shadowy substances or waves, and you can literally visualize or picture it going from your thought to that place. And you just keep that current filled with the will of healing. And that, he said, is how it works. And I must say that, you know, some people have given me a lot more credit and so on than I believe that I personally deserve in this area of healing and so on. But when somebody comes to me whose belief in me is stronger than their own disbelief in themselves, I find I can help them. It isn't me, Wayne Dyer, this physical body that is here. It's this energy of knowing that healing is possible and that it's in every one of us. And that healing energy is something that all of us have. And that by putting your hands on or just convincing somebody or just letting them know that I have such a strong belief in you that you can be healed, that has a tendency to transcend the negativity that is the disease process. And that it isn't some magical faith-healing kind of thing at all. I mean, if you read the work of Bernie Siegel, and if you read Deepak Chopra, and you read Dean Ornish, and many of these people, medical people, who are talking about the mind-body connection, they're really talking about a strong sense of connecting to the chi, or the prana, which is just the energy. It's just another word for that energy, for that God force. And knowing that it's in you to be able to put along this current, this healing capacity. And kahunas did this. And that's how they worked, as he explained it to me. Now, there's a whole lot of training and so on that goes with it. But I find it very intriguing when I think about this word attraction and being able to attract and this concept of energy. There was a poem by a Sufi poet. His name is Rumi. He lived 1,000 years ago in what is today Afghanistan. Rumi had a poem that really reflects what I'm talking about here. It's called The Seed Market. I'd like to share it with you as we talk about this energy. He says, "Can you find another market like this? Where, with one rose, you can buy hundreds of rose gardens? Where for one seed, you get a whole wilderness? For one weak breath, the divine wind? You've been fearful of being absorbed in the ground or drawn up by the air. Now your water bead lets go and drops into the ocean where it came from. It no longer has the form it had, but it's still water. The essence is the same. This giving up is not a repenting. It's a deep honoring of yourself. When the ocean comes to you as a lover, marry at once, quickly, for God's sake. Don't postpone it. Existence has no better gift. No amount of searching will find this. A perfect falcon, for no reason, has landed on your shoulder and become yours." So this force, this healing energy, this invisible attraction that we want to use to bring something into our lives is the same power that you have that allows you to process exactly what I'm saying right this minute. It's almost like you have to do a somersault into the unimaginable. You have to think of yourself as not only having a physical body, but as having an energy body as well. If you take your arm and you stick it out in front of you straight, you'll see there's about, however long your arms are, there's that much distance between your trunk and how far out your hand extends. And you move that hand above you and behind you and all around you, that distance is an energy body that is always with you. And the sorcerers talk about this energy body as being something that is assembled around you. And this is a foreign concept to all of you cookie thieves out there. It's a foreign concept, that one that is already, I can hear you out there listening in your car saying, wait a second, what is he? Is he flipped out? What is he talking about, an energy body? And yet, when you begin to see that this energy body, if someone gets too close to you, if someone is talking to you and they stay about here, you're pretty comfortable, aren't you? It's okay if I stay about an arm's length away. But if I get in here, and if I get in here and begin talking to you, there's a discomfort. And this discomfort is not because you're so fragile, but because the energy body of yours has been broken. The boundary has been broken. And that boundary, according to the kahunas, that invisible energy that surrounds you, the great teachers, the teachers of Castaneda and people like that, Don Juan Matus and the Nagual Julian, these people talked about an assemblage point of energy, that this energy is assembled around you. And where it is assembled around you determines your agreement with reality. And in order to shift your agreement with reality, which is what I'm asking you to do in this program, to shift your agreement with a reality that says, I don't have this divine capacity. I can't tap into that energy. It's not within me. It's out there someplace. It is not me. And as you begin to tap into this, you learn how to shift this assemblage point of energy. And when you can shift that assemblage point somewhere in back of you, when you can just shift it, your perception shifts. It's very much like what happens when you're in a dream. And everything is just as crystal clear as it could be in this dream. You might be composing. You might be writing something. You might be giving a talk. You might, who knows what it is that you're doing. But it's just, every word just seems to flow and you just seem to be in harmony. You might be flying. It might be just a perfect moment. And then you wake up and you can't recapture it. And you think, gee, I can only do that when I'm sleeping. But I want to tell you that if you learn to tap into this energy body, and that's what this meditation does. When you learn the manifesting meditation, what happens is you shift the assemblage point of energy in your body and in your life. And you do a somersault into what was previously the unimaginable. And what happens is that you begin to see yourself as someone who has much greater power than you ever thought you had before. Someone who can do things that you've been told you can't do. Someone who can be in more than one place, perhaps, at the same time, like you are when you're in your dream. Someone who can change shape, like you do when you're in your dream. Someone who can be young or old. Don Juan, in his training, in his early training, Don Juan Matus, in his earliest training, had to dress as a woman for 2 years and disguise himself as a woman and never, ever be found out. If he was ever found out, he had to start the 2 years over. Just to prove that he had the capacity to disguise himself. Just to have that energy of being able to be male or female. To know that that's not something that's separate from you, but that you have that. This ability to have someone come at you that you don't want to see you and to make yourself invisible to them. Through the use of your energy body. These are all things that we think, oh, come on, we can't do that. Where are you coming off with that stuff? You're cookie thieves. Because you're stuck in believing there's only one dimension of reality, and it is the reality that your senses process and perceive. And you don't understand yet that there are other dimensions of reality, and you can at least peer into them. And if you want to do more than just peer into them, you can wander into them. Your life here is like being in one room in a house that has 1,000 rooms. And you show up in this one room called daily awareness. And you live in this room. The door opens at your conception and it closes at your death. And you live in this room and you try to figure out a way into the other 999 rooms that constitute potential human awareness. But you can't get in them. Because you're always pushing and pushing and pushing on the walls and looking for an exit out of this dimension that's out there. Somehow this pushing process doesn't work and you just keep pushing against these walls. And then you have the insight, the awareness. And you step back. And finally you realize that the doorway out of the limitations of daily awareness opens inward. You step back and you allow the door to open and you walk right through. And as you walk through, you begin to see the ability to manifest, the ability to manage the coincidences of your life, the ability to place your attention on prosperity, on healing, on unconditional love, on kindness, on divine relationships. And you see that energy not just as something that is static and stagnant, but as something that is alive and flowing and moving and connecting everything to everything. It is said that when a butterfly just moves its wings off the coast of the United States, it flutters the breezes and the leaves on the islands of Japan. The connection is that subtle. There is nothing that separates you from that divine source except your belief that you are separate from it. Thank you very much. Thank you. Principle is called connect to your divinity with unconditional love. And the affirmation for this is I express the energy of unconditional love to all people and all things in my life. Connect to your divinity with unconditional love. The emphasis is on the un. There are no conditions. That the force that we're speaking about here in this program is the force of love. Another word for God is love. Another word for this divine energy, this universal intelligence, is love. Love is the glue that holds everything together. It's the energy within every cell that allows it to stay in place. If you take an electron microscope and you artificially begin to manipulate the electrons inside of an atom, and you align a certain number of them, when you reach a certain critical mass number, one-third, one-tenth, whatever that number might be, all of a sudden, all the rest of those electrons within that atom automatically align. They just line up with each other. That force, when you reach a critical mass within an electron, within a subatomic particle, within a molecule, within an atom, within each and every one of us, is this force that Pierre Teilhard de Chardin of Chardin said is the glue that holds everything together in the universe. And being able to do your manifesting requires this kind of commitment to this. I think, the most beautiful passage in the entire New Testament is Corinthians 13. I'd like to share it with you. It's something that I read every day. I use it in my talks most of the time. And it really is reflective of how important this principle is. It says these words, "If I speak in the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and I can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It is not rude. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrong. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when perfection comes, the imperfect disappears." When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put childish ways behind me. Now we see but a poor reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. It seemed to me, as I was writing Manifest Your Destiny and as I was preparing myself for this program, that it would be impossible to not include the necessity of experiencing unconditional love, even if you just did it for a day, in order to be able to understand its relationship to manifesting. You see, the force that is universal, the force that is divine, the force that we call universal intelligence, the God force that is in all things, is love, which means that you, when you remove yourself from love, remove yourself from the God force, from God. From this divine energy. So that thoughts that you have that take you away from love, thoughts of judgment, remember, it does not judge. It does not keep record of wrongs. It bears no anger, no hatred. This is a very tough thing for those of us who are rooted in the physical domain. To begin to practice this idea of living unconditional love in our lives. It requires removing judgment from ourselves. The thing that is the source of most difficulties in most relationships is this statement that if only you were more like me, then we would be getting along a whole lot better right now. See, if what you think about is what expands, and what you're thinking about is what's missing or what's wrong or what you don't like or what is evil or what is bad in another person, then the relationship has to take that tack, that road, that path. It has to. Because what you think about is what expands. As you think, so shall you be. If you're thinking about what you don't like, then what you don't like is what will expand. So it really requires, if you want to be able to manifest love in your life, or loving relationships in your life, or peace in your life, you have to shift your thoughts to unconditional love. Even when people are behaving in ways toward us that we find offensive. I've often used the metaphor in my talks and some of even my earlier programs of the orange. If I had an orange up here and I were to take that orange and I were to squeeze that orange as hard as I could squeeze it and ask you what will come out, you would say orange juice. And if I said, why, when you squeeze an orange as hard as you can squeeze it, does orange juice come out? You'd say, well, it's an orange. That's what's inside. And if I said, well, does it matter who squeezes it or what instrument you use or what time of day or what the conditions are? You'd say, that's all irrelevant. None of that makes any difference. What the circumstances are, what time of day it is, who does it, when you squeeze an orange, you get what's inside, orange juice. And now if you extend that metaphor to yourself and someone squeezes you, someone puts pressure on you, someone says something about you that you find offensive, and out of you comes anger and hatred and bitterness and tension and fear and anxiety and stress and an absence of what you'd like to manifest, because you can't manifest with those things. They are blockages to the flow of divine love and the universal God force. It isn't because of who did the squeezing. It isn't because of who said what they said. It isn't because of the instruments that they used or the timing. It's because that's what's inside. So how does it get inside? How does orange juice get inside an orange? I don't know. It's one of those great mysteries like the plum. It's just, you give God the credit, you enjoy the oranges, and you move along. But how anger and hatred and tension and bitterness and fear and anxiety and stress and an absence of what you want to manifest shows up in your life is because of how you choose to process the world and how you choose to make the pictures in your mind, the visualizations, the images in your mind, which literally are what cooperates with this divine energy, with this divine force. So your pictures, your inner pictures of what you want to manifest, if they are tainted by anything other than unconditional love, as it shows up, you inhibit that manifestation process. You stop it cold. You can prophesy, you can have knowledge, you can do all have all of these great things, and as it says in Corinthians, it will perish. If you have knowledge, it will be stilled. If you have prophecies, they will go away. What it's saying there is, you have a body, and that body will disappear. And all that you know and experience in the physical domain will also disappear. But love never does, because love and God, love and divine essence are exactly the same, and they are unconditional. You have to have the same love for God or for this divine essence that it has always had for you. Through the worst of your days, through the lowest points in your life, this love has always been there. It's available to you. You could take it at any time. You're never turned away. And it's a supply that's inexhaustible. You can't exhaust it. You can't make it go away. It is there. So there is a power in unconditional love that is very difficult for most of us to grasp. I don't know if you've ever been around a being who lives and experiences unconditional love. But when you are, you discover that the energy that they radiate is infectious, like being in a room with Mother Teresa. Just being in her presence, they said of Jesus, they said of Buddha, that when they would go into a village, just their presence in the village, nothing more, just their presence in the village would change the consciousness of those around them. From the perspective of having this divinity within you, which is a love for what is going to manifest, what happens when you start picturing your world this way is that your life starts to change. What changes is you feel more peaceful. Love and peace, unconditional love and peace, really go hand in hand. And when you get this quality, and what I suggest to you here is that in order to practice this, to understand that you sleep better, you eat better, you automatically begin to take better care of your body. Toxins are no longer that important to you. Exercise becomes something that you just absolutely do because you're treating your body with unconditional love. And it demands that. It encourages that. It wants that. It doesn't want to be drear. It doesn't want to be overweight. It doesn't want to be drugged up. It doesn't want to be lethargic. It wants to be flowing, because the universal energy that makes the whole thing work flows. It doesn't stop. That energy isn't stopping. It's not stagnant. It's a flowing. When you start doing these things and these changes start taking place, what happens is also the prosperity that you thought you couldn't have also begins to flow. You've stopped all blockages. And while this just sounds like, oh yeah, but I don't have to do anything, you will do something. You will act upon this unconditional love. It's like go on a program for 3 days. Make a 3-day program in which you are going to communicate with your spouse, your lover, one of your children, a friend, a coworker, a boss, someone that you are close to. And every thought that you are going to have directed at that person is going to be one of unconditional love. No matter how crappy they may act, no matter how much complaining they may do, no matter how much you find them to be irritating or whatever, you are going to respond with unconditional love. Not gushy, oh, isn't that great, you're throwing up on me again. Not that at all. But just the thought, the absence of judgment, the absence of anger, the absence of the ego demand that says, you know, you should really be like I am. You're wrong and I'm right. You just let go of that. Try it for 3 days. A 3-day program of unconditional love. And watch what happens to your energy level. And watch what happens to the things that you want to manifest in your life. And begin to notice how you're sleeping and what the content of your dreams are. And notice how other people begin to treat you. You see, unconditional love is joy, and it's also power. There's an enormous power, but it's not the power that is an investment in having power over others. It's a power of being able to tune in finally to the thing that makes the whole universe work. What do you think keeps this whole planet from falling off into an abyss? What do you think it is that keeps your shoulder from falling off? What do you think it is that keeps the cells of your eyeballs in their sockets? There's a force, there's an energy, there's something that is working that keeps everything in place, that makes it all work, that makes it all flow. You finally begin to tune into that. You start to trust your nature more than you trust your intellect, which is your ego. Your nature knows how to work. It knows how to make your body work. Your nature knows exactly how many nutrients to send to all the different organs of the body. You don't have to think about that every time you eat something. It's working. Your nature knows how much oxygen to take in and how much to let out. You don't need a formula for that. Your intellect says that water there can't possibly be made up of 2 parts of hydrogen and 1 part of oxygen. Those are gases. Your intellect says there's no way. But nevertheless, it is, isn't it, as we examine it. So your nature works perfectly in perfect harmony, as does everything else that keeps the oceans from tilting on the side and having tidal waves. This nature of yours that you are in, that is in you, that you are not separate from, is flowing. It's perfect. It's unconditional. It doesn't judge. It doesn't ask anything. It just flows. It's everything that I read there in Corinthians 13. Be that, and the rest of this will fall right into place. It's astounding how powerful this unconditional love is. I want to tell you a story as you think about this force and picturing and putting yourself in a perspective of unconditional love, which is an absence of judgment, an absence of anger, an absence of telling yourself that someone ought to be like you. And I want to tell you how it has worked for me. One of the things I have known in my life in recent years is that it's important for me to get my ego out of what I do and how to go about doing that. which is to take my attention off of the outcome and what's in it for me and how much I'm going to get, and put it more on serving. And stop being so concerned with how much comes to me and how much approval I get and how much money I get and all of the things like that, and to just stay more centered on what it is I'm about. And I picked up a story last Christmas morning, a newspaper, and my daughter Tracy and my wife Marceline were there, and I read this story, and the story said, woman spends her 27th year in a coma. And I read this story, and it was a story of a woman named Kay O'Bara and her daughter, Eduarda O'Bara. The story went on to say that in 1970, on January the 3rd, this young girl who was 16 years of age slipped into a diabetic coma at about 4 o'clock in the morning. She had been given oral insulin as an adolescent, and it was called diabetes, and it wasn't metabolizing with her, and she wasn't getting the insulin. It wasn't going into her bloodstream. And she woke up in this, she was just shaking and in great, great pain, and they rushed her to the hospital. And as she was on the hospital bed, her mother went there with her in 1970. Eduarda, the young girl, who was a senior in high school at the time, said to her mom, "Mom, you won't leave me, will you, Mommy?" And she had never called her mommy before. She had always called her mom or mother. And Kay said to her, "I will never leave you, I promise. And a promise is a promise." And that was in 1970. Well, 27 years later, Kay has been feeding Eduarda every 2 hours for 27 years. Imagine yourself never being able to sleep in a bed for 27 years. At 2 a.m., 4 a.m., 6 a.m., 8 a.m., getting up every night, sleeping in a chair next to your daughter. Imagine yourself never going to a mall or going to a movie. And imagine yourself being drained financially by medical bills alone that number now $3,000 a month just for the medication, with an income of $1,100 a month. And imagine yourself also every 4 hours, 24 hours a day, six times a day, having to take a blood sugar reading and then administer insulin based upon the reading, six times every day. And imagine yourself coming home from that hospital bed. This woman was a school teacher, a mathematics teacher and physics teacher down in Miami. And she came home 4 months after the onslaught of the coma because they no longer could afford to stay in the hospital. Their insurance had run out long ago. They were now borrowing money. And then imagine 4 years later, the husband having a conversation with you, saying, "I can no longer stand to see myself standing by, watching, while our finances are drained, and I can't do anything for my daughter. I'm going to go to heaven and work from there." And the next day, dying of a massive heart attack at the age of 49. And then when that happened, the other daughter, Eduarda's sister, becoming a crack cocaine addict and living on the street and having her only little baby being raised by Kay as well. Losing your husband, your daughter to a coma, your other daughter to the streets, and still every 2 hours, 24 hours a day, 27 years, feeding and taking care of this child. This is the story of Kay O'Bara. And I read that story, and I was astounded by this kind of unconditional love. And I said to Tracy over and over again, I said, I just can't fathom how somebody could take a quarter of a century and more and have this kind of devotion. And I took a copy of one of the books I wrote a couple of years back called Real Magic, which is a book about miracles. And I wrote in that book, "You are my hero." And I sent Kay a check. I thought that I was then done with it, which is, it was a very touching story, but it was still sort of tugged at my heartstrings. And I went away in January to write this Manifest Your Destiny book. And while I was there, I turned on the TV for the only time I had it on while I was there one evening, after I had completed writing about unconditional love. This principle that I'm sharing with you here. And on the TV, there was a show called Inside Edition, and Deborah Norville was the hostess, and she came on and said, and I know Deborah, I've been on the air with her, and I admired her a great deal, and she said, there's going to be someone on the show that's very special later, a mother whose daughter's been in a coma for almost 27 years. You'll want to stay tuned. And I thought, wow, that could only be the lady, because I didn't even remember her name that I had written to back at Christmas. And sure enough, they open up the TV show with her reading to Eduarda from Real Magic that I had sent to her. And I thought, something is happening here. Something is happening here. And I thought, when I get home, I am going to look up that woman and find out if I can get her phone number and maybe call her and see if there's anything more that I can do, because I was so touched by that. And when I got home in February, after writing, picked up my mail, and I had a huge stack of mail, and on the top of the mail stack was a letter from Kay O'Bara thanking me for the check I had sent and for the book and asking me if I would please come down. Well, my wife and I went down to see Kay and Eduarda. And when we went to Kay's house down in Miami, about 40 miles from our home, walked into Eduarda's room, a room filled with angels and relics and all kinds of spiritual literature and music. And just, it was like we knew we were in a holy place. And as I talked to Kay and told her how touched I was by her unconditional love, her display of unconditional love, I had to fly away a couple of days later and go out to the West Coast, California, out into California. I had to do a show out there, a politically incorrect show. And I did the show, and when I was coming back after doing the show, my wife called and she said, you know, Oprah Winfrey is going to be taping a show on people in comas, and they would like you to be at her home tomorrow if that's possible. And I said, well, I'm not flying back till tomorrow. She said, well, maybe you could fly on the all-nighter, the red-eye, and get in the morning. And I said, all right, I'll do it. And I flew home, and I went there, and they taped during the day. They came to her home. And while I was there, I talked a little bit about who I believed this person to be, who was doing her holy work from this place. And then the show aired. And the show was about people in comas, but it was focused on this policeman in Tennessee who had been in a coma for 9 years. And then he suddenly awoke, and he just began talking after 9 years, and it was considered to be a miracle. And they had his brother and some other people on the show, and then they had some other people who had been in a coma but had come back, but they weren't the same as they were before the coma. And the focus of the show was mostly on how tough it was, what a struggle this was, and it's not easy on the rest of the family and so on. And then Kay came on the show. And Kay is the most uplifting and dynamic and positive and joyful person. And she said, this is not a chore. This is an honor. And when she was asked, well, why do you do this? She said, well, God asked me to do it. And God never gives you any more than you can handle. She said, I only asked for 2 daughters. I didn't ask for them to be anything special, anything unique. I just asked for 2 daughters. And I take care of her, and I am honored to serve her in this way. And she is fed through a tube. She has brain activity. She was 27 years ago in what is called a stage 1 coma, which is one in which they had to tape her eyes shut because her coma was so deep. And today, more than a quarter of a century later, when I had my other children come down and sing to her, and Serena sat up there on the bed with her and held her hand, this was Easter Sunday, and I said, we have to go now. Grandma's coming over, and we have to get home now. And she turned her head, and a tear came down her eye. And the last time that I was in her presence, which was not more than a few days ago, when I walked in after having been gone during the summer, she smiled in recognition. She's in what is now called a stage 9 coma. Whether she's coming out or not, we don't know. But 5 years ago, Kay told me what happened in confidence. She said, it was 1991, and it was in October, and I woke up to give her 4 o'clock feeding, because she only sleeps for 45 minutes at a time in a chair. And she said there was a bright light in the room. And I thought someone was there to harm Eduarda, because people have driven by her home and shot bullet holes into their walls saying, we're going to put her out of her misery. There's that kind of consciousness that is out there. And one interviewer said, isn't your daughter a vegetable? And she said, I've never seen a vegetable smile, have you? So she saw this light back in the room when she was preparing the food to go into the tube that feeds her. And she walked back there very quickly, and there, standing at the foot of the bed, was an apparition whom she later identified as the Blessed Mother, Virgin Mary. And she began to talk after her initial fear and said, was told that your daughter is a blessed one. And she said, well, why is she in a coma? And Kay told me that the Blessed Mother had told her that your daughter is a victim soul, and you'll have to find out what that means yourself, so you'll know. And she called the different priests and the different places in the Catholic Church hierarchy, and none of them had ever heard of that. And then she called a cardinal, and the cardinal said, where did you hear this term? And she said, well, I'd really rather not say, because she didn't want to be perceived as being nutsy and crazy and so on, talking to ghosts. And the cardinal said, well, this is a term that goes back to antiquity. And a victim soul is someone who deliberately takes on suffering as their purpose in being here in order to teach compassion or to teach love or to teach peace. Very much like Gandhi did during the rioting in the 30s and 40s when he would fast to the point of dying as long as there was some violence. And he was willing to take that on rather than to allow that to continue. And we all know, of course, of the great tradition of Christianity, of taking on suffering so that the rest of us might be freer people. And when I interviewed Kay about Eduarda, I asked her, what was Eduarda like? And I asked her classmates, and I asked her sister and her relatives, and everyone that I asked said the same thing, that Eduarda was like a saint when she was a little girl. If she saw someone who was hungry, she would give them her allowance. If she saw someone who was cold, she would take her sweater off and give it to them. She studied the saints, carried books about the saints with her wherever she went. She didn't know how to judge anyone. And I went home, and I was doing my meditation, and I thought, what can I do? What is the message here? Why am I so attracted to this? And in my meditation, I said, I'm going to write her story. And I'm not going to take any money for it. Just like I appeared on Oprah with her for the first time when there was nothing in it for Wayne Dyer. And even though I was only on a minute or so of that show, it was one of the most fulfilling things I'd ever done. Because I knew it wasn't for my own ego, but in the name of serving. And I called Kay and I said, I would like to write your story. And I'll donate all the royalties to you, to the Eduarda Obera Fund. And we'll sell a million of these, and we'll get you out of debt, because she has this onus of debt around her neck, $300,000+ worth. What she has done is had made baked goods and has done cookbooks and has done celebrity auctions and has borrowed from here, has had 35 to 37 different credit cards going at one time and having to borrow from loan sharks and being threatened, all just to keep this thing going, because there's been no other way to make it work. And her debts are huge. I said, I know I can remove that. And she said, you know, Doc, it's funny that you called, because the Blessed Mother said that the right angel would show up and would tell the story with dignity the way it needs to be told. I said, well, the only thing I can say, Kay, is that I have to tell the whole story. Your fear of what others might think when I talk about your speaking to apparitions and so on has to be dissipated. She said, I trust you completely. Tell it as you will. And this is the result. It's called A Promise is a Promise, an almost unbelievable story of a mother's unconditional love and what it can teach us. And I asked my wife, my dear wife, who has birthed 7 children, to write a mother's perspective. And she wrote a beautiful chapter in here. And we also included photographs of Kay and Eduardo before the coma and after. And in my heart, I believe this is unconditional love in action. Very much like Mother Teresa sees Jesus Christ in all of his distressing disguises, I believe that Kay's work with Eduardo teaches us about a full measure of unconditional love. And that Eduardo made the choice, as the Blessed Mother told her. When Kay said, well, did she have a choice to do this? And she said, absolutely. And she's teaching compassion. And as I speak about it here, and as I speak about it on these tapes, and people listen to it, and people go out and purchase this book, and the money goes to Kay and Eduardo, I believe that what is happening is that she is teaching us compassion, which is the cornerstone of unconditional love. And she's doing her work through me, through you who are listening, for those of you who purchase A Promise is a Promise, and give it away as gifts to others who have demonstrated unconditional love. As Kay says, it's not if she will wake up, but when there's enough compassion in the world, her work will be completed. And she will either awaken or God will take her with her. And that's unconditional love. There's no better example of it that I know. Thank you very much.